This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
Yesterday, we tried to get our heads wrapped around some definitions when it comes to understanding school culture and school climate. And today we're going to begin as the hook or the introduction or whatever you want to call it in your lesson planning. We're going to do the assignment from yesterday. So I'd like for you to follow me through this. If you would get the sheet that I gave you yesterday, if you don't have the sheet I gave out yesterday, can you put your hand up? If you don't have that, Erickson, if you could help us out there with those papers, yesterday's papers. Some of you, in fact, I happen to know this now, that a few of you had nothing negative in your classroom climate last year. Literally, I heard this. Hallelujah. This is extraordinary, and this particular 20-year veteran says that it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to experience that. But I would like for us to think through culture and climate here, and I don't want you to feel extraordinary weight or think you have to get it just right or get the perfect word or what if the teacher beside me doesn't get it or what if I am off on the wrong track. That's really okay. We're all learning. We do this to our students all the time. It's okay to make a mistake. It's fine. It's how we learn. And then you come here and you have all kinds of pressure to get it right. I knew that. So I want you to not feel extraordinary pressure. I want you to think and be thoughtful about several things. I want you to think of two words that describe the climate of your classroom. Give me a positive, write down a positive word and a negative word, if you have one. So some of you, no, I get that. Don't make something up. But what would describe the climate? Remember the attitude, not the personality of the school, the attitude. I'll give you a moment. If it helps you, especially a lot of you who didn't have anything wrong last year, if it helps you, think of a particular student maybe even that brought a certain set of ambience with him or her. Do you know what I'm saying? It only takes one person to kind of upset that fruit basket sometime. So I want you, if it helps you, think about what that one student brought. Maybe that's easier for you to think about. Now, don't overthink this. You're just hoping I don't call on you. Put your hand up when you have at least one of those words written. Put your hand up. As you get it done, just keep your hand up. As you get it done, you can pop your hand up. If you need to cheat on your neighbors, I'm giving you permission to cheat. Write their word down. When you get one of them, okay, put your hands down, please. I would like for you to turn and tell. Do y'all do this in your classrooms now? Turn and tell? You know what I mean by turn and tell? Should I explain turn and tell? Turn and tell is when Hannah tells Melody the thing that she wrote and gives an example why she put that down. Then Melody will tell Hannah what she wrote and why she wrote it. That's turn and tell. It's very simple, but it forces you to talk about what you just wrote. I'm trying to do more here than just talk about school culture, by the way. There, it's out of the bag. Now, I want you to turn and tell. And if it doesn't work very well, it's okay. I mean, twos, threes, however. But normally this is done in pairs. If it doesn't work out, that's okay. Find a way to talk about one thing. Choose one of those right now. That way, we'll start in real easy for you. Okay? You guys are great. You have lots of things to say, don't you? You didn't think you did. You do. Now I want you to write down on your paper the cultural values that support the negative climate word. How is there room for that? How is there room for that? What's going on underneath? If you don't want to use the negative one, use the positive one. I'm giving you all kinds of outs here. Never do that with your students. Make him work through it. Okay, but I want you to think of one area in which, what is underneath that? What allows that to be? What is the value, the belief, actually, that makes that word a possibility? Okay, write it down. Shorthand. You don't have to turn these in. Write something down. Put your hand up when you have something written down and keep them up. Okay, now turn and tell your neighbor. Was that harder or easier than you thought it would be? Maybe you thought it was impossible to start with. Is this difficult to do? No, not really, kind of. To give words to something that's sort of there, but doesn't have good words to describe it. You felt like you wanted to write a paragraph to get all the nuances and put everything together so that we'd actually know what you're talking about. I understand that. It is difficult. That is why we don't do more thinking about culture and climate in our classrooms. Because when you go to talk about it, how do you talk about it? It's hard. It's hard work. Thinking has always been hard work. I hope that's a little bit helpful for you, that I have to start articulating, putting out there in words, verbalizing what you feel and experience. Remember that climate gives us a way to discern what the culture is like. Climate is also very helpful in changing culture, especially when you have time on your side, which we'll get to that time issue later. What I'm really saying is long-term teaching is the way to change culture. You knew it had to come sometime. There it is. I think we've also faced the fact here that the school and classroom culture is truly a powerful force that we need to reckon with, and that by understanding some of the elements in our school culture and our classroom culture, it gives us an opportunity to retain the things that are strengths for us, that are positives, that are going the right direction, and it gives us an opportunity to change things that ought to be changed, the parts that are toxic. I'd like to begin now by thinking about the power of culture. The power of culture. So what can a positive classroom culture do for us? One of the things it does for our students and ourselves is when things are positive, when they're moving in a certain direction, it sharpens everyone's focus. You become a little more alive. If you are hanging on for dear life, you're focused on hanging on for dear life. I'm saying sharpening our focus on the realities of our students and our classrooms. It increases our attention toward the important. It gives direction to daily behavior. Which way is your classroom going in terms of its action, in terms of its climate? Which way is it going? Is it getting a little bit better all the time, or is it getting a little bit worse by the day? And of course, you'll start off the year really, really well, probably. It starts off well. It's how long is it till things start cropping up? How long is it? How long? 4 to 6 weeks. You give things the first things develop about weeks 2 and 3, small things, and about month to 6 weeks into the school term, you begin to have some other stuff happening. But which way are you going with that? Is it going to go downhill? Or are we going to keep improving? A positive school culture increases attention to what is important and valued. if your school culture supports a sports program, let's say that your school is into some competitive sports, and that is, it's a big driving force in your school, I can pretty much assure you that your students in your classroom will be drawn to that very quickly. It will sharpen their focus towards sports. And it's going to be hard to pull them into the grammar lesson when they're thinking about the game in 2 nights or that night. One of the reasons in our school I resist competitive sports. I'm saying how our culture, okay? Here. I resist that. It is a distraction to what I really care about for my students, for our school. There's levels of competitive. We're not going to go into all the gymnastics of that. Some of you are awake. Thank you. Isn't it true that if there's a strong culture that students are drawn to that, that's the lunchtime discussion. That's the 3-minute break discussion. If what is valued in the home are movies and video games and things like this, you realize this stuff comes out. And then you talk about something, the hand goes up and says, well, I saw a movie once. Or I played a game that was like, and you can take any number of 1,000 things. You see, when you've got something, when you have a part of your culture, your culture will shape what we pay attention to. And so if we're minimizing sports, in our case, we think that it's a good idea to prepare students for the mind. We don't ignore the body, but we think it's a bit of a distraction. And so the focused attention doesn't tend toward sports. If you get a positive climate where it's okay to not have competitive sports, it relaxes everything. It doesn't have to be front and center for everybody. My 7th and 8th grade teacher had this, he is why I teach probably. We called him Coach. And he's one of several people, but he was very, very significant. He taught junior high, and he is the one that sort of turned my life in a little different direction, because he was able to work with me in a very bad stuttering problem that I had. And he cared about me. He actually, you know, asked about my baptismal. Public school. He asked about that. He was interested, and he supported me. He was very significant for me. One of the things I remember about him is that he threw a fit of sorts, in a nice way, if he used incorrect grammar. And I see some people that are alumni from that school saying, uh-huh, we remember that. And he had this little chart, actually. I remember it was in a book or on the wall, I forget. And if you used not correct grammar, then he put this little mark there. However, if you caught him in incorrect grammar, you got 5 or 10, you know, freebies out of the deal. So what were we doing? Trying to catch him. Did you know that a lot of people that came out of his classroom speak more correct grammar? They speak it better because for 2 years he focused our attention there. It was a simple thing. Did it overwhelm the whole classroom? No. It was always there. So you were always paying attention. Always paying attention. And I caught him twice. He caught me more than that. You see, there's something about that. The focus shifted. Instead of thinking about everything else, we actually thought about what he was saying. Right? It's brilliant and simple. A positive school culture can do that to us. It can focus our attention in the right places. If the culture supports speaking correctly, students will tend to choose to speak correctly. Secondly, it builds commitment. Students want to be on board with what we are doing, if it's a positive thing. Your students are not your enemies. Your students are your students. They actually are for you. They want the school to do well. They want to be a part of something that is going somewhere, that has a sense of vision and direction. They want that. And sometimes if you have a tough year, you start questioning that. Don't go there. A strong, positive classroom and school culture builds that commitment into it. It's a sense of ownership that says, I care. I want the school to succeed, and I'm going to do my part, and I'm proud of our school. Well, in an Anabaptist kind of way. But I like my school. I want to be here. If your rituals and traditions and ceremonies in your classroom build a sense of community and camaraderie, students feel a level of commitment to the class and school. They feel committed and connected to the relationships that are there. And one of the ways to get there is, you guessed it, long-term teaching. Think about the effect of a teacher teaching for a very long time in one school. Students begin to anticipate coming into the classroom, if it's a good place to be. I think of Miss Allen back there. I had to pick on you, I'm sorry. Did you know that in Miss Allen's community, I'm told that everyone wants to go to Miss Allen's first and second grade classroom? Am I right, Phil?
First grade.
All right. Everyone wants to go into first grade with Miss Allen. If you were to ask parents there, what do you like about your school? Miss Allen. Two words come out of their mouth. Miss Allen. I don't know what all she's done, but she's been a little while. Something has happened. Students want to be in Miss Allen's classroom. They actually want to go to the school because, well, Miss Allen's there. And so is Miss Martin, Mr. Gerson, etc. But you see, this is how it works. When you have a positive culture and climate in your classrooms, but you don't get there cheaply. You can't take shortcuts to that. I pity the students that I had my first year. I'm still pitying them. But they all seem to survive. You know what I mean. It's just, you look back and say, wow, I did that? And I wasn't even fired for it. It's a learning curve. And the funny thing is, it doesn't ever stop. It never stops. There's always more. That's one of the great joys of your job. So often, we cut that off, then we don't experience that. Long-term teaching is a way to help build commitment in your school. It also increases motivation. How hard students work is at least in part connected to the feeling that they get in your classroom. And that means the teacher needs to reward accomplishment and value effort. It's nice when people do what they do because they want to do it, rather than I have to do this. Think about what happens when a teacher gets one of those blank hardcover books and students on one page draw pictures and on the other page they write their story or a story about an animal, maybe a lion. And they write this story over a period of 6 to 8 weeks. And then they draw pictures and they color them on the other side. You know what? They love those books. They keep those books. They're motivated. Simple thing. But something positive is going on there. They actually want to write. They want to draw. They want to create. If your classroom supports that, that's what you'll get. Have you felt the increasing weight of what you do in the classroom as we have talked? You should. That does not mean that you have to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. You are not the savior of your students. But it is true that people matter in classroom culture. People are the greatest driving force of culture and climate. And so I would like for us to step back and think about who are the players, who are the people that have helped to shape your school culture, which in turn shapes your classroom culture. So I have two categories, culture at large. Don't you think your school has been influenced by Western culture? Am I right? You think your school has been influenced there? On the church side, you know, there's a long history of, I'm not sure what to call this, you know, the universal church. The church has been going on for a long time. You know that. You're a part of that. I hope you read your history. That has mattered. The stuff that happened in 400 actually matters. Don't you think maybe American culture has affected your school, your classroom? Do you think for us Anabaptists, maybe the evangelical church has impacted us? Don't you think your state has impacted you? For some of you, that's a whole lot. We still love you. You know, it's interesting. Living in Pennsylvania is not like living in Kansas where I grew up. I'm just telling you right now. It's a different culture. It's fine. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's different. Your state and its culture matters. Don't you have a local community? While you're here, if you'd like a dose of local community right here, go down to Norma's store right down the road here. And if you go early in the morning, about 7:45, you can sit there with several old men who are unfortunately probably smoking a few cigarettes and drinking coffee and telling big stories every day. That is a perfect classic example of our culture in this community. It really is. It's a great window. You make the applications, right? You're living somewhere else. Do you think the Anabaptist culture has affected you? Do you think it's influenced you? Well, of course. What about your local church? The fact is, folks, all of these things come to bear in your school. And all of these things have come to bear in your school. And at some level, your school culture in your classroom is a composite of these things. And we do well to recognize that these are not just terms. There are people at every level here. And they have shaped the culture you live in. Now, for you as a teacher, though, maybe we could look at it this way. So, we have the community we live in, we have the church that sends its students, and we have students themselves, homes, right? Each within a church, you have a church is made up of families, right? And then you have the individual family, and we all bring our own stuff to that. And then we have ourselves. And those four come together into what is your classroom culture. When you look at the whiteboard and you look here, it starts to look very complicated, doesn't it? It's like, well, we're part of something that's out of control. We can't do anything about it. Wrong. In your school, your fellow staff matter. Your students matter. Your parents matter. And you matter. Out of those, which can you control the best? Which can you instruct the best? Oh, myself. Oh. You mean I'm person responsible in my classroom? Is that what you're saying? You're the hinge pin upon which the door of classroom culture opens and closes. You're the one who defines the terms in your classroom. The most important element of any classroom is a teacher. The best curriculum in the world will not save our classrooms or our classroom cultures. I believe in good quality curriculum. But the component that most directly affects everything about your classroom is you. After all, who is in charge? Who is supposed to manage the classroom? Who's in the driver's seat? It's true that the broader school culture matters. It affects the classroom. I understand that. It helps students decide if school is a good place to be. It helps create the right assumptions about your classroom. However, you are not predestined to a certain classroom dynamic because of school culture. When you step into your classroom with your students, it is you and them. You set the terms. You can have a good school culture, be a very grumpy person, and you'll have a grumpy classroom culture. Even if everyone else is happy. You define the terms. Students quickly learn what there is to know about you and your classroom. Do you mean what you say? Do you care about them? Do you believe in joy in your classroom? Do you believe in some rigor in your classroom? Doug Lamov talks about joy and rigor, and I would like to just for a moment camp there. There are two qualities of a classroom that if you nurture these values and qualities, I think you will experience something different if classroom culture is a struggle for you. The first one is joy. Joy and rigor. Joy. Humor. We laugh together. School is serious business. Of course it is. Not everything is hilarious, even if junior high wants to make it that. It's just not always. The humor is a little bit suspicious in cases. If you teach 7th grade, you know what I'm talking about. Okay, but yet, I am careful in those moments to not quench humor, but to guide the humor. Because you need joy in your classroom. Part of joy is actually crying together, being sad together when something bad happens. Because joy, we say that joy is not dependent on my circumstances. There can be something inside that's beyond just a happy smile. So joy encompasses a general sense of peace and contentedness, the idea that we are for each other and we're going to have a good time doing it. Joy. If your classroom is full of joy, your students want to be there and they will want to work for you. If they feel like it's an experience, not unlike sitting in a dental chair getting a root canal, they will resist you. We all want to be, I guess, happy or, you know, positive, don't we? I taught once with a man for a while, and he was a very negative person, and he was such a good man, but everything that could go wrong, he would make sure it could have gone wrong, is what it felt like. And it was hard for students to get on board with him. He was a wonderful teacher, but didn't have joy. And his students struggled. Not because he wasn't a very good teacher, because there wasn't enough joy. He took himself too seriously. Rigor. Are they challenged? I didn't say overwhelmed. I said challenged. Are your students challenged? Are they working? Are they busy doing things that matter in their schoolwork, or are they doing busy work? Do they find fulfillment in thinking, even if it is very hard work? We all recognize that feeling that sort of washes over us when we have accomplished something tough. Haven't you? Do your students experience that? Are we giving them an easy ride? Rigor. They ought to be challenged. Students love a challenge. Students accomplish way more than we think they can so often. We underestimate their ability. If you have doses of joy while you're working your tail off, it's not a bad combination. You can get a lot out of them. Joy and rigor. Think about those two qualities as you think about your classroom. Are they learning and working hard? The tone, the climate that is set will be the context in which students will confront and learn and understand truth. Their view of truth, of life, is being shaped by your classroom. What an opportunity, what a responsibility, what gravity, what joy. An amazing privilege that all of you have to instill in children the idea that I should love God with my whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, that I worship Him with my life. And joy and rigor, I think, will help you get there. Two words to think about. Now I'd like for us to do a personal reflection here. I'd like for you to evaluate your classroom culture. And I'd like for you to begin by naming a personal strength, write it down, a personal strength that you bring into the classroom. And here I'm giving you lots of space, I hope it's enough rigor for you, to choose a skill, an attitude, or a character quality. What about you is actually strength? Some of you are going to be too modest to put much down in a personal strength. Oh boy. No, come on. You know better than that. You all have strengths you bring. I know that. In fact, if you want me to help you, if I happen to know you, I will help you. I can tell all kinds of things about you that you're very skilled at, or you have a certain one of those attitudes that really just comes out of you and people enjoy about you. What is a personal strength? Write that down. Or character quality, it's just you. And if you even put humility down, I won't even mind. When you have that, please raise your hand. I love modest Anabaptists. I do. I'm so glad. But y'all have strengths. I know this. So go ahead. If I have to do an altar call, I will. All right. Hands down. And I want you to write down a way. I say, in what ways? But give a way in which this affects your classroom culture. How does this work itself out? How does this affect your classroom, this strength of yours? What makes your classroom better because this is a strength of yours? How does it improve the learning experience of your students? Is that hard? Raise your hand when you have that down. It's way harder than the first one. As long as you know what you're talking about, that's all that I really care about. You don't have to show this to other people. You have to talk about it, but you don't have to show it to them. How does this positively affect your classroom? What you bring? Okay. Turn and tell. You don't like this, do you? Name a personal weakness you bring into the classroom. There you're thinking, which one? I know you. Now, don't go there, okay? But just give me one. Something that you think is a skill, an attitude, or a character quality that is just weaker. I'm not saying it's sinful. I'm saying it's something weak. Please, hear me what I'm trying to do here. What is it? What is it that you just know you bring a certain sense of weakness in this area? you can't think of one, praise the Lord. You've arrived. Raise your hand when you've got it. So let me try to discover which one. I know, I can see it in your eyes. Bugs me. Thank you. In what ways does this affect your classroom culture? Give me an example. Give me one example of the way in which it negatively affects your classroom dynamic. Practically speaking. Raise your hand when you've got it. I'm really running out of time, so the idea you had, you can just say without writing down, turn and tell each other. We're running out of time. I do not like that clock back there. I do not like that clock. Now I wish you could spend a few moments in brainstorming with your partner what actions you could take to minimize that. What could you do to turn that into something positive? That would be a very healthy exercise. One you might want to continue with the person you were sharing your guts with. Okay? Think about this. And we don't want to stop here just noting what it is. Think about, now, what could I do? There are things to do to change these things. But what are some actionable items? Not more talk, but what are things that I could actually do? Because as I do them, it becomes a part of me. We teach our children when they are angry to not be so angry and go back and apologize. Do you think every time I tell my children, you must go back and say you're sorry, they feel like saying sorry? They say, sorry. No, no. What do we do? We tell them to say it again, right? You have to mean it. Sorry. No. Sorry. No. I don't want to. Right? It starts settle in. Sorry. The action itself brought change. The things that we do actually change us. Think about the things you will do to help yourself here. You might have even noticed that your greatest strength may also be your greatest liability. Did you think about that? The greatest strength may be your greatest liability too, on the other hand. Celebrate your strengths. Don't minimize those. Make them a part of your classroom. And do not ignore your weakness either. Tomorrow we're going to look at rituals and traditions in our classroom. The process of change. And I've taken a risk today of putting the weight of the world on your shoulders. I am a little concerned about what I just did to you. In that I don't want you to feel like somehow now I have to be this perfect teacher. I have to have this all figured out. That I have to know exactly how my classroom should be. And I have to be very thoughtful 24/7. And please, that's not my intent. My intent is to get you thinking about your impact in your classroom culture. You matter. Your classroom culture will not be the same as your co-teacher. It will not be the same, and it should not be, because you are not your co-teacher. You are you. Classroom culture is not a competition to see which can have the most marvelous culture in the school. Classroom culture is best enhanced when we don't compete, but are collegial with each other, when we are for each other, when we can go in the confidence that we know our staff team, who they are, and how I fit into this picture. I have found the Lord brings the right people into our schools to bring about the culture that's necessary for a given grade. My hope and prayer is that you are developing a vision for how the climate and culture of your classroom can impact the school. Let's think carefully about how we can create a culture of joy and rigor into our schools that will provide that context for learning that each of our students deserve.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.